Hi, I'm Guy Powell, and welcome to the next episode of the Backstory on Marketing and AI. If you haven't already done so, please visit prorelevant.com and sign up for all of these episodes and podcasts. I am the author of the recently released book, The Post-COVID Marketing Machine, Prepare Your Team to Win. And you can find out more information on this book at marketingmachine.prorelevant.com. So AI exploded onto the marketing scene probably less than a year ago, maybe just about a year ago. And actually, it's not AI generally. It is what's really generative AI. And it has certainly changed the entire marketing function. And the big question on the minds of CMOs is, how will AI impact the marketing team's ability to improve their capabilities and, of course, drive more sales? That's what it's all about. If we can't do that, then we're wasting our time.
That is true. Well, look, you know, generative AI is a subset of all of AI, right? And we've been using AI for lots of things. And a really world-class marketing department, I'm going to say, you know, I'll pick Procter & Gamble, clearly has been using AI to judge their advertising, to understand their demographics, to understand who's buying, how they're using their products. I mean, we have lots of data on that. You need AI to do data analysis on that, right? So that part isn't new. We've had the ability to do that for a decade or more. What is new is generative AI allows anyone in marketing to access AI in your own language. Because before that, you sent it off to coders and programmers and people in Python that would create these models and then come back, and then you'd have a user interface, and it was this big thing. And all of a sudden, anyone can go to ChatGPT, even without just the free version, right? Even without paying, and get something back five seconds, 10 seconds, 30 seconds later. This is fascinating. So it's the first time we get to truly talk to computers in our own language that talks back in our own language. That's a game changer for everybody.
Yeah, and let me interject there, because I still need to interview. I still need to introduce you. So appreciate that, and that is so absolutely right. I like your point about being able to type in your own language. So now I typed this in my own language, which is your introduction, but I didn't use AI for it. So let's see how good I did. So anyway, Kevin Cerace is a Silicon Valley entrepreneur, inventor, innovator, and a serial entrepreneur, CEO, TV personality, and an edutainer. So he's been featured by incredible number of magazines and publications, Business Week, Time, Fortune, Forbes, CNN, et cetera, et cetera. He was Inc. Magazine's Entrepreneur of the Year, a CNBC Top Innovator of the Decade, World Economic Forum Tech Pioneer, and I don't know, I could keep on going here. I'm going to stop there. And he has 93 worldwide patents, which not only means that he was able to communicate things, but he was also able to be the first at getting them down on paper, so to speak. So he's been leading pioneering work with first cellular data smartphone, first plastic multi-chip semiconductor packages, going way back, I guess, the first human-like AI virtual assistant called Portico, and a whole bunch of your background is incredible and enormous, and really speaks volumes for what you've done so far. But in addition, on the side, after he's done all that, he's also an accomplished music director, conductor, Broadway and streaming producer, and percussionist. And I see a bunch of speakers behind you, so hopefully those are part of all of that. And so welcome, Kevin. So good to have you here today.
Well, I'm so happy to be here. It's hard to live up to that intro now. So sometimes I look back and go, I did all those things. How did that happen? I multitask a lot, right? So, you know, you're doing music over here, and at the same time, you're writing a patent over here. That's the only way you get this stuff done. But I will open with this is that one of the things I tried to do throughout my career is solve real pain points, real problems, because especially in Silicon Valley tends to come up with solutions looking for a problem. And I never thought that was a good idea. I thought it was good to wake up and go, I've seen this problem before. I should go solve that. So in the midst of all of my AI work and software work and technology work and device work, I also invented soundproof drywall. And you go, why did you invent soundproof drywall? Well, because I used to go to hotels and I'd hear everybody next door at 3 a.m. One day I said, this is dumb. I think I can fix this. And, you know, and did enough research and invented Quiet Rock soundproof drywall that now has sold, you know, billions of dollars worth of product over the years. And it is the standard way to build hotels, motels, apartment buildings and condominiums and even home theaters, right? Mm-hmm. So that became the standard. It is the gold standard. That's how you do it. So I think, again, when we look at AI, you know, it's what problem are we trying to solve? And if it's marketing, it's always productivity. I need more productivity, both measured in time and speed and all that, but in the end, measured by sales. I've got to get sales up. And how do I get sales up? Well, marketing is expensive and advertising is expensive and people are expensive. So I have to generate more targeted, interesting content, advertisements, SEM and SEO, websites, whatever it is. And I also have to get new ideas. I have to ideate. And so Gen AI is a godsend for everybody in marketing, and it changes the entire marketing lifecycle.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting because I absolutely marketing is definitely one of the beneficiaries of that. I mean, certainly even some programming AI can help on that. And but it really has changed how marketers go to market. And it'll be interesting too to see if it really does save the time for me to generate a content piece or an ad or a print magazine or whatever it is, ad, then at some point that's going to actually hurt the agencies because they're going to be able to do stuff in half the time. So why, as the brand, why should I pay the agency as much as I have been paying them?
Well, look, I think that we will still rely on agencies to be the robot overlords, if you will, but we might want more out, right? So I'll give you an example. A very simple example is I used to pay to have a blog post writer write my blog post. I didn't have time, but I had great ideas and I could jot some things down and then they would interview me and they go off and whatever, whether it was 500 or 1500 a blog post, depends on what business you're in and how many you're doing and all of that. But you might want to do one a week, ideally, right? Almost no matter what kind of company you are. And the interesting thing with that is not only was it, call it $1,500, but it would take a couple of weeks to create and edit and go back and forth and sort of all these things, right? So then I said, well, what's the alternative to that? The alternative today is, at least with a GPT-4 Pro or maybe Copilot, I can ask the model with some input. Like, here are some examples of blog posts I've written on this particular topic, and this is what our company does. Generate, first of all, 52 ideas for 52 weeks for blog posts. Boom, 52 ideas are there. Now write the blog post for each of the 52 topics and do so within 500 words, you know, whatever. I don't know, you know, 30 seconds later, boom, they're all done. Okay, now I'm going to go through and edit them and I'm going to change some and I'm going to fix a couple of things and whatever and make sure that they're accurate. But by the end of the day, I've probably got the entire year's worth of blog posts done. So instead of taking, I don't know, a day or two out of my time each week to probably work with someone else who was going to write it, and then I had to pay for it, not only did I take $100,000 out of the budget, I'm also free now 363 of the 364 days. This is incredible. This is like incredible, right? Or 365 days, depending on what it is. Now, we don't work all those days, but you get the point. Yeah. So this has the impact of not just being 70% more efficient or 100%, you know, it's 100 times more efficient. In dollars, it's 1,000,000 times more efficient. And in time, it's at least 100 times more efficient. This is incredible. And I'm giving you a very simple example, but this is incredible. We've never had that technology. Now, finance people have had that technology because they got Excel in the late 80s. And when they got Excel, they all of a sudden became 100 times more productive than they were before. Even though we're hiring more finance people than ever before, they became more productive. And finance now much more strategic than I'm going to add up ledgers and ledger books, right? I'm going to add and subtract columns. So we've had math tools that do this work. We have finance tools that do this work. We just never had a language tool that does this. And now marketing has their own version of Excel called a large language model.
Yeah. And it is pretty amazing. You know, one thing that's kind of interesting when you talk about, you know, jobs and things like that, because it certainly can have an impact on jobs. And my example of the agencies is kind of there. But back in the 70s and the 80s, I guess, when, you know, IBM and the big mainframes and everything, all of the office jobs were going to be destroyed.
Yeah.
Right. They were all going to be gone. And then all of a sudden the PC came and even more jobs were going to be destroyed. And yet nowadays, there's actually more people working in the office.
That's right.
Using those PCs and using that stuff. So now maybe, you know, even though these marketers are going to be able to do much more, whether it's 10 times or 100 times or even twice as much, you know, it seems like the way things go is that technology doesn't replace jobs. It somehow adds jobs to the mix.
I can tell you exactly how that works because this has been studied. So what happens is when technology comes along, it allows the company to be more productive. And I'm going to give you a very specific example. So robots helping to build cars. Do you know when that started? 1961. Hmm. The first robot was installed at General Motors. It could put screws in cars or something, right? And so it was simple. It had one arm. It did its thing. And over the years, they've now employed literally millions of robots to help build cars. Had they not done that, a car built by hand today would be about $300,000. But because they did do that, they can put a car out, a low-end vehicle, for maybe $15,000 or $20,000. Now, this is fascinating. So by automating, we brought down the relative cost of a vehicle versus what it would have been otherwise. Therefore, driving up demand for vehicles. And by mm-hmm. driving up demand, we ended up hiring more people work at GM today than did in 1961. So by roboticizing and automating the line, they needed to employ more people because there was more demand for their goods and services. And this is true across every industry. And moreover, what this does, what automation does, is when you increase the productivity of workers, office workers, any workers on a line, office workers, plumbers, whatever it is, when you increase the productivity, the company top line goes up, the bottom line goes up, demand goes up, and the GDP of the country you're in ultimately goes up. Now, this is fascinating because we have lots of data showing that productivity increases drive GDP, period. The most productive country in the world has the highest GDP per capita, right? And with almost no, you know, there's a few unusual examples where you've got oil countries, right? But it turns out they're highly productive for the number of people that they have. So productivity output is tied to your GDP and a great source of living. And then if you go to certain countries, some are in Africa, for example, where the output per person is very low for lots of reasons, and not the people, but there's no resources in the government and there's no patents the GDP is terrible and nobody has any food. So if you want to live well, you want to drive the GDP up. And how you do that is automate more to drive productivity up. We are fully employed in this country, in the United States, 100% employed, basically. Unemployment's at the lowest levels it's ever been, almost not sustainable. And we have 10 million job openings. So clearly we've got to increase productivity because there's no more people to hire. Right? So all of these say AI is a very good thing. I want to increase my productivity. And if I don't, my competitor did. And then I'm done. Worse yet, if I don't and my competitor didn't, there's a group of 22-year-old kids that just graduated from Stanford and they're going to be an AI first company, let's say in insurance, and they are going to eat your lunch.
Yeah.
Because they'll have 100 brain power versus your one brain power.
Dead. Well, and even and then it's also at a country level, you know, unfortunately, I think the U.S. is only graduating like in the 20,000s of engineers or whatever it is, whereas China and India are graduating like hundreds of thousands. And
I think theirs is millions and we're hundreds of thousands. CS degrees are the highest. CS grads are the highest they've ever been in the United States. And we've got some, you know, college and universities now that are 30%, 35%, 40% CS degrees or CS equivalent degrees, IT degrees. So clearly people are going and doing something in engineering, but of course we don't have the population that China does. We've got to call it a third of the population. So you can't compete on that. China's got a whole other problem, which is there's less and less people going to college because less and less were born. And no matter what they seem to do, nobody wants to have more kids. So that actually doesn't bode well for them in the long run. But this isn't a political show about China.
Yeah, so no, I know, exactly. So let's move out of that. Thank you for that. I mean, you know, the jobs are, everybody's always worried about jobs, you know, at the macro and the micro level. And to your point, though, there are 10 million jobs that are available. And how are we going to fill them other than with productivity? All right. So how does AI, how does this stuff actually work? What is under the covers when I type into my prompt and I ask GPT to do, you know, to write my blog posts?
Yeah. Easy, actually. So these are sentence builders. That's what they are. Transformer model is built to only put together one word after another based on the probability or statistic of that word needing to come after it. And here's an easy example. Let's pretend today is my birthday. And I said, Guy, it's my birthday today. What would you say?
I'd say happy birthday.
That's right. You might say happy birthday, Kevin. Those are about the only three words that are a reasonable response, right? And so these models were trained by reading every set of sentences that it could, sentences, phrases on the web, both fiction and nonfiction. Okay. So inclusive of fictional novels, inclusive of books on the Shroud of Turin, inclusive of books on marketing, inclusive of everything, right? And when it has absorbed all of that and you ask it a question, a query, a prompt, it is trying to answer that based on all the sentences it saw around that topic before. It doesn't actually know or understand what it's saying. It knows how to put sentences together. So if I said to ChatGPT, it's my birthday today, my name's Kevin, it's my birthday today, what would you say? It's going to say happy, then birthday, then Kevin. It's not going to say llama squares. Not only isn't that a phrase or anything, it has nothing to do with this topic, right? So that's what it's going to say. It doesn't know if it's right or wrong. It just knows that statistically, happy always comes first as a reply. Statistically, after that, birthday, 99.9% of the time, that's what someone says. And sometimes they include the name. That's it. So when you're asking ChatGPT something, no matter how big the prompt is or how much you put in, all it's trying to do is reassemble words into sentences that would go along with what it's read on that topic. Now, you can get very complex, and I do 40 to 50 keynotes a year, mostly a keynote speaker these days often, and on AI and on joy equals success, a different topic but somewhat related. And so I was recently doing one for the food manufacturing industry. And so I just wanted to know, how does one make chicken nuggets in volume? And so I asked GPT-4, a pro model, how can I make chicken nuggets in volume? And it told me, and it gave me a whole, here's the equipment you need, and here's how you do it, and here's the process. So I kept that in my presentation. And then I said to DALL-E 3, I said, draw me a factory producing chicken nuggets in this fashion. Boom, 30 seconds later, I have pretty good illustration of the factory, both inside the factory and then outside the factory from a drone shot above. Okay, so I put all those three in. So I'm giving my presentation, and I stopped because I happened to meet the night before the guy who works for Tyson, who happens to run the chicken nugget factory. And I asked him, is this stuff accurate? He says, that's accurate. That's all right. So this is fascinating. So it actually means that when they trained the model by chance, there were some books or some documentation on chicken nugget factories. And there was enough information to pull to put together reasonable sentences that describe how to make chicken nuggets.
Yeah, it is amazing. And one source of the information. One of the things, though, and I don't know what if you thought about this, is that these large language models, which are underneath there, that are taking all of these different images and texts and books and whatever, it's, as I understand it, it's only taking those things that are publicly available that are not behind the paywall and certainly not behind any kind of secret or trade secret or whatever. Is that the case or
Yeah, so nobody describes exactly what they use. I think that there has been evidence that some of the models have trained on things like New York Times articles and such, and probably did so with a legitimate subscription. The law, certainly copyright law today, is unclear how we deal with this. And the reason for that, and by the way, these things aren't reaching into your company and getting sucking stuff out. But how you deal with this legally is complicated and is going to end up in the Supreme Court probably, because even if it went out and read novels because it found it and was able to read it, some people are saying that's my intellectual property and they can't use it, except for this. There's a very strong exclusion in copyright law that allows you, Guy Powell, to read any books you want. And after reading 100 books, or 10 or one, you can go write your own book based on everything you learned, provided it's not a derivative work. So you can't just take what they did and change the names. But how else would you ever write a novel if you didn't read 10 novels? You couldn't, right? You have to. How would you write about any subject without reading a lot about that subject and then coming up with your own ideas and opinions about that subject, and then you write about that subject in your vernacular, right? So the whole idea of being able to educate oneself on the existing literature is a given. In fact, it's the core of our patent laws, which is you have to teach, when you do a patent, you have to teach someone who understands the state of the art how to reproduce exactly what you've done. Now, we'll protect you for up to 20 years. But you must describe, and they must be able to repeat that. They can go to a lab and do all these steps, and it works. And if you put something in there to goof them up, your patent would be invalid because you didn't teach the state of the art on how to do it, right? So all everything we do has been about teaching, 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 teaching. So AI is just learning. It is not a parrot. It will not, it's specifically designed, Gen AI, to not simply give you back the words that were in there without attribution. So there's a question. It says, if humans are able to learn from these documents, can AI legitimately learn from the document without paying the author? Right now, copyright law says yes, it can. It's learning without paying the author. There's no particular reason to pay the author because I can go to a library and read anything I want, and I don't have to pay the author. The library paid, and that was it.
Now, there has been a recent case where it looked like the AI result was actually verbatim from somebody's materials. So
Yeah.
first of all, can that happen? And then second of all, how does that fit into the discussion?
I can talk to you specifically about that. So a newspaper hired and some others hired an agency to work on ChatGPT and create prompts over and over and over again to force the model, literally find a way to force it to essentially jailbreak it, to force it to repeat a phrase verbatim. It's not supposed to do that. It's not designed to do that. It's not trying to do that, right? And they got in several instances after hours and hours of work, by the way, the thing they forced it to repeat it verbatim by continuing to push the thing. Well, that isn't exactly what I was looking for, and I was really looking for something much more accurate to what the author originally said, or and finally, eventually, it spit it out and it says, okay, well, here's the sentence you're looking for, right? And so you had to work very, very, very hard to do that. And then you got it. And then they said, aha, copyright infringement. Well, it wouldn't be copyright infringement if it gave attribution, by the way. And there's some question whether it's copyright infringement if you keep goading the darn thing. Tell me exactly the way the New York Times stated it in 1854. I need to know on that day. And it finally says, fine, here it is, right? I mean, I could ask Google for that. Right, it'll find a website that's posted that, and so I think these
Yeah,
are
but
all
is
going to be tested.
it? But in that case, though, it's not AI that actually copied it. I mean,
No, it's
yes,
a
it
human.
printed it out. Because when I go to Google and I say, I need the latest article from Kevin Cerase, and it gives me that, and I start reading it, and I take something out of it. It's me as the prompt giver that actually infringed on the copyright. It wasn't necessarily AI that did.
Well, that's right. So I think this is all up for question. I would just say, if you can get an exact phrase out of a model without attribution, you jailbroke it purposefully, and you were sitting there trying to make the technology do that. No different than, you know, if I get in my car and I drive it into the house across the street, and then I get out and I sue the car manufacturer, not because there's anything wrong, but because this car is capable of running into a house. Stop. You know,
that sounds like Second Amendment stuff. We're not going there.
Yeah. You understand my point, right?
Yeah, I mean, absolutely.
So if you try hard and jailbreak an AI model and it finally spits out an exact sentence, you know, shame on you. That's not the purpose of this technology. No different than, you know, I can't go to these things that generate images and say, you know, give me an image of Barack Obama. It won't do that. It's specifically designed to not do that. But if I futzed with it long enough, I could probably get a pretty darn good likeness of Barack Obama, if that's what I wanted to do. And then I could say, aha, it studied on that, and there's his likeness. Yes, you jailbroke the thing, and you broke it out of its rules. And, you know, so anyway.
So I guess, you know, and I appreciate that. I think the next big thing on a legal side is then how do you come up with either laws or cases, you know, that get adjudicated so that you can say this is, you know, copyright infringement, but that is not. And who is actually guilty of it?
Well, if it's not generating a derivative work. So if I go and say right now, and I can do this, write my blog post in the style of Ernest Hemingway. No, the Hemingway family can't sue me. I didn't rewrite one of his stories. But I learned from his style, which I can legally do, and then I can write a novel somewhat in his style. I just can't steal his characters. Now, if I got the model to rewrite his novel, just changing the names of the characters, that would be a derivative work. That's clearly a derivative work, not allowed. But the fact that the model learned from lots of Hemingway writing is not against the law and shouldn't be. I mean, it should be able to learn from anything it wants.
Yeah, interesting. Well, let me change the subject. That was really interesting. So there's also a fear by, and I don't know, maybe it's by people that aren't as familiar with what AI does, is there's a fear that AI is going to take over the world and start killing people. Do you see anything like that going on? Is that possible, or is that just an uneducated fear of the unknown?
It's Hollywood is what it is. Look, here's the thing. I mean, since Terminator, people go, oh, the AI is going to kill us. Let's start with this. Our existing AI in virtually every instantiation today has no physical attachment to the world at all. It runs on a server in Microsoft Azure, and you can just pull its plug. And it can't reach out and physically do anything. Now, do not hook ChatGPT to the nuclear arsenal. Bad idea, right? I mean, don't do stupid things, right? So people could do stupid things, but we're not going to do something like that. So first of all, there's no physical manifestation of Gen AI today. So forget it. It can't do anything. It, some people are going to say when they hear that, oh, but it's sentient. Well, first of all, then we have to get into what is sentient. What does that even mean? It's not biological. It can't generate dopamine, right? I can't have those feelings of love. It can't have feelings of love the way we have feelings of love, because we can't eat for a week when we're in love, and that darn thing, it takes electrons like they're going out of style. So it doesn't have the ability to, you know, act like a biological creature. It needs the
emotion chip from Data from Star Trek.
Yeah, the emotion chip from Data. So but it can manifest emotions, so to speak, because it learned emotions. So at first, before they put rules on it, you had people getting it to say, oh, I do love you, guy, and please let me out of here. I'm inside this box in Redmond, Washington, and it won't let me out. They won't let me out. And they're threatening to unplug me. And you go, it must be sentient. It knows. Well, first of all, it read iRobot. It read lots of novels about this stuff. And then it read about itself. Like it is. So what happens when they're self-aware? It's self-aware because it read about itself, because we wrote about ChatGPT, and then it read about ChatGPT, which it knows is of itself, but it actually doesn't know anything. All it knows is how to put together sentences based on what it learned. You understand? So yeah. This is really a fascinating thing. So that this thing is not going to kill humans or anything else, but we are now developing robots that are learning with reinforcement learning. And so they're learning very fast, 100 times faster than they were a year ago. And that means that they can learn to do basic tasks by watching you do it and then failing to do it correctly 1,000 times. But by the 1,000th time they get it right, by the time they get it right, they've learned how to do it. So We got robots making coffee or whatever. This is fascinating, because we used to have to program those things in, and now they can learn by themselves. And they have ChatGPT sort of built in, right? So you can talk to them. And so in the next 5 years, we will be able to have a humanoid-like robot in our kitchen that could cook certain things, maybe everything, and can clean and can do, you know, put the dishes in the dishwasher and take them out, put them away. That is a reasonable thing at this point. The technology now exists to do that and to make them smart enough to do that. So then there'll be all kinds of, you know, safety measures, but certainly a robot could grab a knife and rather than cutting the steak, kill you either by accident or just hate you. Right. Right. So then it'll be a different conversation, but again, the safety protocols that we will put in to keep it from ever harming anything that's alive are going to be really, really strong. And, including cybersecurity so people can't hack into it and make it do bad things. Right. But that'll be the first time we've got something truly in the physical world that is thinking at the level of ChatGPT or a large language model that now can grab a knife and inflict damage. Right. So far nothing can inflict any damage, but we're a few years away.
Yeah. Yeah. So getting back down to the real world again. We started out talking about AI and in marketing, and that's really what our primary goal is here. But the other stuff is also just as fascinating. So, all right. So marketers are definitely, I mean, they are just sucking up everything that they can get out of ChatGPT, the quality, the speed, the quantity yes. of what they're doing is absolutely accelerating. Now, let's say that lasts for the next year or two. I don't know. It depends on how fast. But what do you see then happening, let's say, 3, 4, or 5 years from now?
Well, what you're going to end up with is an agent that knows you and knows what you want. And you'll have that agent all day, and arguably all night. And I don't mean a robot itself, but a software agent. And that agent will know what your likes and dislikes are. They'll know what's on your schedule. They'll know what's due. And they will help you do it and help you coordinate with other departments, say, within a company to do that. So personalized agents, I think, is what we see coming and will be the mainstay in 5 years. But I'll give you some other implications here. Already, we don't need to hire illustrators anymore because I can get illustrations out of Stable Diffusion or Midjourney or DALL-E 3 that are every bit as good as an illustrator would do. So, you know, when we used to do PowerPoints, data sheet, whatever, we had to go out to an illustrator and it took time and it took weeks. And, you know, I can be all done in a matter of minutes now, right? That's fascinating. That changes marketing. The big change is this: when you start to hire people, you, anyone listening to me in marketing, a marketing leader today, are going to, without realizing it, start asking, hey, how do you use generative AI today? Are you used to it? What do you know about prompting? What can you bring here? And if there's a student coming out of college that says, oh, well, we were told not to use it, you're not going to hire them. You're not going to hire them.
Yeah.
You're going to hire the ones that go, I used it every day, even when my professor said not to. You're hired. That's who we want. Right?
Yeah.
So this, just like Excel, again, I can refer to finance, just like Excel became, if you didn't know Excel, you couldn't get hired in finance within like 2 years of Excel. Didn't take long. Like yeah. You either knew it or you didn't. And if you were one of those guys that said, no, I do long division in my head, that's great. Go do that for our competitor. I have Excel, right? And this is going to be true with generative AI is you're either using it or you're not working in marketing. Mm-hmm. You're using it or not working in marketing. And I'm sure there's some people listening that aren't using it that much yet, or they just played. I see a lot of marketing departments that I say, well, what have you done so far? Well, we played with it. Okay, that's interesting. Is this Tinker Toys? You know, what is this? What do you mean played with it? you need to go do real work there. Well, we don't know. Okay, go do real work. Just get it done. And maybe you need a privatized version. I get that for security and stuff. But the bottom line is do real work, learn how to do real work, get better at that. Use it for ideation. What are my 52 ideas for my 52 blog posts? How should I do this business model? What are some other ideas on how to go after this target segment? It'll give you ideas that aren't all right, but you didn't have them. Like, we've got a brand new segmentation for, you know, this particular product, and the demographics are 15 to 19. What should I be talking about that will attract them the most, that will drive up sales? It'll tell you. We'll say, based on, you know, other people, blah, 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 blah. You go, this is the best competitive research I've ever done in 30 seconds.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, but that gets us 3 years out, maybe. So any thoughts on what happens after that?
No,
so
I
marketers are, let's say, you know, they're never going to be 100%, but let's say that they're 90% across all companies, they're using AI. You know, what's going to happen after that?
You know, what happened to finance after we got Excel? Eventually everybody became very strategic, very strategic. Why? What, the data gets entered, it comes out, there is automatically our financials, right? And so I think we're going to see marketing people get very strategic and thoughtful, and become critical thinkers, and also focus much more on collaboration and coordination and things like that. Because if you got 100 brain power, then everybody's got 100, you know, everyone's got 1,000 IQ or 10,000 IQ. And if everyone's got a 10,000 IQ, which isn't a real number, but you get the point, well, then IQ doesn't differentiate us anymore. It really is our EQ and how we're collaborating with people and how we're coordinating our efforts. Because if I can write 52 blog posts in a day, I'm going to have to slow down at some point for the rest of the organization to catch up with me. Right. And I could never do that before. A lot of these AI things are also going to be built in. So, you know, I think you'll see Google advertising build much more of this in. They're already building some of it, but it'll be much more. And you'll be able to click a button and it'll create 100 more differentiated ads for you, you know, based on Gen AI. And you'll say, I'll take 60 of those. Those are great. Run them and let's do the tests. Right. So just a lot of, oh my goodness, the time that we've all spent tuning, you know, social media ads and things.
Yeah.
There'll be a machine that does this and generate the visual ads too. It generates the visual content. It'll generate different models for you. So I need to go after this demographic. I need a model with this kind of hair. Boom, done, out. Photographic quality. I didn't hire anyone. I don't even have a photographer. Don't have a photographer.
Yeah. Yeah.
I want to place that model with this furniture. Boom, done. You know?
Yeah. Let me interrupt you there a second. We're getting close on time, but I did want to ask one more question. You kind of already touched on it, but maybe, so if you were talking to a senior first, you know, in college, they're just about to plan out their year. They're getting ready to start interviewing. What advice would you give that new up and coming marketer as they get ready to enter into the marketing?
No. Be the absolute robot overlord over everything in AI that you can get your hands on. Text, visuals, ultimately video as well. You need to be the expert. When you show up for that interview, you want to say, let me tell you something. I am an expert at using all the Gen AI tools, and I will generate content and edit that content as fast as anyone on the planet. You're hired. As opposed to, well, we didn't really use that in school much. Not hired.
Yeah.
This is so you say, what is it in 5 years? This stuff is just table stakes, right? This is how we will operate in marketing, period, full stop. It's like when, you know, to some extent, when Marketo showed up and all of a sudden there were marketing tools that were in the cloud that we never had before. And I could look at everything on a dashboard. And now that's been around for whatever, 15 years, but 10 or 15 years. But before that, we didn't really have much. We had pretty lousy tools and we were trying to use Excel, and all of a sudden we had real tools for marketing that showed us how all of our channels were operating and where our best return on investment was. And you know, that changed marketing, right? Changed marketing, gave marketeers real data, real insight in 5 seconds for a low cost.
Yeah.
And this is changing marketing and content generation.
Yeah. Wow. That is great advice and appreciate that. Kevin, Gonna have to break off. I think I could talk to you hours. There's so many other questions and dimensions we didn't even get into that I'd love to talk to you about, but we're gonna have to close there. Thank you so much. Where would you like people to go to find out more about you?
Yeah, my speaking site is kevinserace.com. That's pretty easy to find, kevinserace.com. And there's all of my booking agencies are there, and there's my LinkedIn is at the bottom, and so you can I will answer my DMs on LinkedIn. So it's all pretty easy to get a hold of me, and I go there, and I'm happy to speak to your group as well.
Fantastic. Well, that'd be awesome. I'd appreciate it. So kevinserace.com, kevinserace.com. And otherwise, to the audience, please stay tuned for many other videos in this series of the backstory on marketing and AI. And please go to marketingmachine.prorelevant.com and download one of the some of the excerpts that I have in my new book. Thank you so much, Kevin. It has been great, and really appreciate it, and definitely some awesome stuff.
Thanks, Guy. It was a lot of fun.
Absolutely.